Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Well, there's been a lot of shows in the WWE over the past week. We haven't talked about them yet here on the podcast, so we're going to talk about them now. Brian Fritz with Michael Wiseman. Reminder, too, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. Rate us and review us. Say nice things or else Michael will come and haunt you in your sleep. And then you can find us, find all the podcasts on SoundCloud. And also, please support us on Patreon as well. It will be your good deed for the holiday season. So,
get ahead of the questioning here. I do know where you live. Yeah. So if you do say bad things about us, I will not only haunt you in your sleep, I will haunt you in your awake hours as well.
Yeah, because I was going to say, do you have Santa's list so you know who's been naughty and who's been nice?
Yep, but I focus more on the naughty side. So,
I'll bet you do.
It's my job.
Well, you know, like I said, there's a lot of shows we haven't talked about yet. So we got to talk about TLC and we got to talk about Raw, which I did not know this, but apparently you didn't watch Raw live. So I spoiled the big, ending to the show for you,
man. You and your sporting news and Fox News and every news thing is, more like,
don't associate me with Fox News. Okay, please. There's gotta be a cutoff line somewhere.
CNN covering wrestling now.
Me and Wolf Blitzer are forming a tag team.
Right, that's right. To cover. I was scrolling through the Facebook.
Fritz and the Blitz, we're going to take you out, brother.
Fritz and the Blitz. Actually, that's really good. You and Wolf Blitzer, let's start that. Hashtag Fritz and the Blitz. I was spoiled by Raw. So I watched TLC Sunday night. Monday night, I was not in a position to be able to watch Raw live, so I was catching up on it. Unfortunately, somewhere in between, I saw your column for Sporting News, and I knew that Roman Reigns was going to be the champion. So there, I just spoiled it for everybody else. If you haven't watched Raw yet,
I can imagine you squealing like a little girl when you found out, yay, Roman!
Yeah, I was so excited. we're going to dig into this real deep, I'm sure.
Deep.
But my impression of Roman Reigns changed drastically from the 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock hour Sunday night till the 11 o'clock hour. And by Monday night, I thought they were doing something pretty good with him. So
yeah, I thought so too. You know, it's amazing when they finally had him be angry. I mean, that to me, that was the whole difference. There was two big differences, two big things that they did. One, he got angry so many times after he's lost and he's been screwed over. We've seen frustration or we've seen some tears, but we haven't seen anger. So he finally snapped, which was a big thing. And then the other thing was, too, they stacked the deck on Raw and they were saying, okay, we've got the crowd behind him following TLC. Okay, how can we keep the crowd behind him? And the way that they did was, we will have the McMahons go against him. The villainous, dastardly McMahons. And that was a super smart move, you know? I mean, Vince hadn't been on TV in over a year, so it was smart to bring him out. Stephanie was slapping him left and right, and they didn't have Triple H on that show to sell the beating. So there are some other details that if we really want to nitpick, we can sit there and say, why they do this, why they do that. But the totality of the story, I guess, and the ending point, it all worked. And the goal was to get the championship on Roman Reigns and have people cheering for him wildly. And they accomplished that.
And it's so funny because this is the kind of thing we had been talking about for a while. Now, of course, granted, we took it a step further. I think we said Roman Reigns should be this utter badass, but he should turn heel in the process. That was always my take because the audience was working against him. What they did was they finally just stopped all the shenanigans. They stopped all the suffering succotashes and all the stupid grinning and all the smiling for the cameras and let him just beat somebody up. It was like it was whenever he was back in the Shield again and he was just this silent, lumbering monster who he doesn't have to try to be cool or try to get over with the fans. He's just himself and that makes him cool. It's kind of like what The Rock had going for him way back in the day. I'm not comparing him to The Rock, but that same kind of, The Rock was cool and he didn't need to try to be cool. He was just cool. Roman Reigns did that with his beastly personality Sunday night. I think they did the right thing Sunday night by having him react that way. I think Monday night they booked him well. He's had some good matches. I feel like it was probably still a little bit too soon to put the belt on him after all of this, but they capitalized on the moment. So therefore, I'm okay with it. And listen, if you get that Philly crowd cheering for Roman Reigns after 12 months ago they were booing the crap out of him, that's saying something. So WWE did something very right in this situation.
The whole thing, the whole situation, especially what they did on Monday for Raw, it harkened back to the Attitude Era.
Yes.
Because it was, let's set up a challenger at the beginning of the show. We have a challenger. Let's set up an angle to where he gets a championship match. And then you have the match that night. And on top of that, he won the championship. So the last time we'd seen that the world title change hands on Raw, I think it had been like 3 years. And then the other thing is the way that they have pushed Reigns over that 24-hour period was straight out of the Stone Cold versus Vince McMahon playbook.
Yep. And we can compare it to the Attitude Era, obviously a very different time. But that whole Monday night show felt kind of like a throwback show. Granted, of course, it's very on the nose because you have the Dudleys out there. You have Hardcore coming back. Mm-hmm. But Monday night show reminded me of the way they used to book shows. Not that every match had to be a 3-commercial break epic, but that you had one long match. You had a couple of shorter segments. You had a fun brawl. And then you had the main event was what, 12 minutes? It wasn't that long. And it was booked to a T.
Yeah, absolutely was. It wasn't to the magnitude of like, you know, when Foley won the belt, you know,
no.
but it was, you know, there were some elements to it there, you know? So, I mean, it was kind of done in that vein. It just, obviously the reaction at that time was something that we'd never seen before because that was at the height of wrestling's popularity. And that was just, you know, disgustingly raucous, shall we say, when Foley won the belt. And that's probably never going to be replicated again. But, you know, I mean, they did it smart, you know, and I commend WWE for turning it around with Reigns. They stuck to their guns. They wanted to keep him a babyface, even though I agree with you that they should have turned him heel. And we talked about it, you know, incessantly. And they stuck to their guns and they figured out a way to make it work. Now, the question is going to be, can it continue to work? Was it just the Philadelphia crowd that got caught up in the moment because they figured out they were going to see a title change? Or is this something that the crowd's going to remain behind him?
Right. The question is, what do you do next? How do you capitalize on this momentum? And more importantly, how do you keep this going in a way without reverting to your old tricks? And that's my concern. It's great. We had one good night of Roman Reigns. We had one solid 24-hour block of Roman Reigns. That does not a champion make. So what are you going to do with him on Thursday? What are you going to do with him next Monday? And then for the next month, going into the Royal Rumble, it's going to be key. But I'll say this. I was talking very broad. I think that TLC was fine. I think it was a step up from Survivor Series, mostly because of the carnage. Otherwise, it felt very pedestrian just from a nothing really stood out. Yes, there were a few high spots, but I don't want just there to be a few high spots that stick out to me from a pay-per-view. I want the whole show to feel fantastic and cohesive. Monday night show was memorable, and I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, I thought TLC was a good show. I wouldn't say great, but it was good. And definitely there was a couple of things that stole the show. the opening match and the closing match, to me, those were the two show-stealing matches. And there was some other good action in between. I mean, you could say what you want about, like, the elimination tag match of the Wyatts against the Team ECW, which was perfectly fine. Kevin Owens against Dean Ambrose, perfectly fine. Charlotte against Paige was perfectly fine. That was actually pretty physical. I liked that match. And then you had the Ryback Rusev match, which was you know, Del Rio against Jack Swagger. It was like they owed each other money or something and took it out with those damn chairs, which was scary to me. Those damn chairs scare the hell out of me. But let's talk about that opening match, though. Dear God, what a spot fest. And I mean, God bless those guys for going out there and doing what they're doing. I mean, I enjoyed it, but at the same time, it's just like these guys are killing each other out there. So they do this tag match with Big E and Kofi, the New Day, Usos, and then Lucha Dragons. Freaking Kalisto damn near sawed himself in half about 10 times this match. Lucha Dragon stole the freaking show here, including they did a dive from in the ring to outside the ring to, I think it was one of the Usos, was trapped under the ladder. They did a double team move where Kalisto ended up doing a flip and splash onto somebody who was under a ladder in the ring. And then the ultimate one was the Salida del Sol, which was, that has to be one of the freaking most insane moves I've ever seen. And the way that they did that, where Kalisto ended up straddling a ladder, like landed on it with his butt, but had his legs around it, but landed on that damn thing because there was a ladder that was set up sideways. It was between like another, between two ladders. And the Usa that took the bump landed perfectly on the ladder and the whole ladder like folded in. But still, both those guys, that was just punishing to see that. But I mean, the way that they did it, it worked perfectly, but my God, that's one of the more insane things I've ever seen in a match in WWE.
Yeah, it was super dangerous. I mean, you have to have such a level of precision landing that move, hitting that move. God bless him for doing it and doing it successfully and not killing himself. But that was insane. These guys, it was very obvious to me, went out with the sole purpose of trying to top TLC or TLC 2. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to set this up as, okay, the Hardy Boys, Dudley Boys, and Edge and Christian, they had their day back in the late 90s, early 2000s, but we want the tag team division to be like that again. And they tried to structure this match in a way to where they could recapture some of that glory.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, credit to all of those guys. I mean, I sit there and say about the Lucha Dragons, but all of them worked extremely hard and went out there, busted their ass, and made that to something special. And then Sheamus and Roman Reigns went out there and killed themselves as well, where Roman was just tossing Sheamus from pillar to post. At one point, they were up on the stage. Sorry again, everybody. My cough is back, so I'm you know, I know it's annoying as hell. But there was a one point where Reigns grabbed Sheamus and like threw him over, you know, a table that had chairs stacked up on it that was up at the top of the ramp, and they were just beating the holy hell out of one another. And I mean, you could see the marks on Sheamus's back. In fact, after the match in the back, the WWE took pictures of him and sent it out on Twitter and Instagram. My God, this guy, man, he was beat. God, yeah. You name every part of his back, it was marked up. He had one thing that was like on his left elbow where it looked like somebody had like stabbed him or something. But they had a hell of a match. You had, you know, the Legion get involved. Or the League of Nations, excuse me. And then, so, I mean, everybody got involved, and Reigns ended up getting screwed and didn't win the championship. And, you know, Sheamus, though, got a brogue kick in at the last minute to finally be able to climb the ladder and get the win after the interference. But those guys had a hell of a match, which went about, 24 minutes. And then afterwards, Reigns just snapped and like beat the hell out of Rusev, and he beat up Del Rio, and he beat up Sheamus, and you know, the chairs was flying, and then the next thing you know, Triple H came out there and he wanted to break it up, and Reigns just wanted none of it. And I mean, you name it, he did it to Hunter, and Stephanie was crying and screaming, and Reigns didn't care and put him through the broadcast table. And then finally, when Triple H was limping around the ring, Roman was up at the, he had already walked away, and he decided to come back and like full steam ahead spear on the floor, where he just freaking sliced Triple H in half. And that just won the crowd over, where they're chanting, "Thank you, Roman." So, you know what? We can sit here and talk about Triple H. You know, when he does wrestle, he loses all the time. And you wonder how much heat the guy still has. And plus, you know, him being the ambassador and the guy behind NXT, which people love him for everything he's done. But when it comes to that character on Raw, people still hate him, and yep, that helped Roman.
he's done a really good job of separating that over the years, keeping his on-screen persona at NXT to a minimum. And I think that's really kept his heel character, his authority heel character on Raw super strong. And I think it meant something. It felt like this Daniel Bryan thing we had a few years ago, right? The whole, they're using Triple H as the authority heel to put over the babyface.
Yeah.
But it worked. I liked it. I did have, okay, so that brawl was great. The two matches you talked about, they were great. I felt, again, like you, that Jack Swagger Del Rio match, that was tough. I had some concerns about Kevin Owens, Dean Ambrose. Not just the match. The match was fine. But mm-hmm. the way they booked Kevin Owens going into this, and we've talked a lot about this, the way they've done things, I did not feel like Dean Ambrose needed to win that match or the title Sunday night.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. And you know why? I mean, that he won it, apparently why he won it, because he was the only babyface that got a victory that night.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but still.
I mean, that's not the right reason to have somebody right. win. I mean, that's you know, it needs to be the right time if you want to change the title. But I guess that's just where the Intercontinental Championship is right now. I mean, it's up to WWE and Ambrose to do something with it now.
It's nice that they put it on Ambrose, and Ambrose seems serious about it, but I just think Kevin Owens was a great guy for that title. I think it was a great spot for him to kind of get back some of that heat he had early in the summer, and to see them just kind of move on from Kevin Owens like this really bothers me. But Ambrose is back in the picture, I guess that's good.
Well, you could sit there and justify it by saying the following night that Ambrose, you know, got his heat back, you know, because he beat up two people.
You mean Owens?
I mean, Owens did, excuse me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he beat up Ziggler, and he beat up Ambrose.
Yep, I will buy that argument. I still am hesitant. I just fear that Kevin Owens is going to get lost in the shuffle. He's going to move on from this feud into something that's not meaningful, and he's going to end up as mid-card fodder, and that's not where he needs to be.
Well, it can't be any worse than what they've done with Tyler Breeze since he got brought up. Oh, my God.
He's been there for like a hot minute, though. To be fair, he's been up there for a week.
I know, but that dude, he needs more than a shovel to get out of there, man. I mean, he needs, golly, man. He is getting buried and lost in the shuffle so bad. I mean, I'm going to have to put on an APB for the dude at this point, man. It's crazy. My God. I hope he keeps taking selfie shots, because that's the only time we might see that dude, you know, when he doesn't have his shoulders on the mat.
I mean, right. They'll get him over. I think this is just a transition time. I think Tyler Breeze does have a future. They wanted to bring him in, and he has a solid gimmick. So,
yeah, I just don't like him. Like, what's the point of bringing the dude up? And it's not just because, yes, I'm a big Tyler Breeze fan, but at the same time, this goes for anybody. Why bring somebody up if you don't have a game plan for him? And this happens. And it's funny because Triple H just did a conference call a week ago, and people were asking him about bringing people up, and he says, why should we bring anybody up if we don't have a game plan for him for 6 months?
Right.
Yep. It's like, why the hell is Tyler Breeze on the main roster? I mean, you can't give me the justification of, well, he had done everything he could in NXT. I could say that about Enzo and Cass, and they're not brought up. So, yeah, it's just weird. I'm not blaming Triple H, you know. I'm just... It's like, my God, this guy gets, you know, they finally bring him up there and, you know, nothing. I mean, he got the win against Ziggler the one time, and then that was it. It's just like, now he's just fodder for everybody else. But that's my rant on that. So, yeah, with Owens, I'm not as afraid with him, but it is something to be curious about. I mean, there's two schools of thought, I guess, with him, like, okay, what he did on Monday, you know, beating up two guys, is that the start of something or not? Like, I some people are, I don't know if there's any validity to it, but there's been some scuttlebutt, and I think it's just more fan talk than anything, that maybe Owens is being set up for Lesnar at WrestleMania. I don't think that's the case. And I have no idea who he might be facing right now. Like, there's some secondary guys, I guess, that I could see Owens facing at that show. But when it comes to like being in a main event caliber match, like one of the top three or four matches, I just don't see it right now. But so you're hoping that what he did on Monday, that's to build to something. And it, you know, it's not just going against Ambrose. It's even something bigger and better beyond that, but I don't know if that's going to be the case.
Yeah, that's and again, WWE has historically, and by historically, I really mean in the last couple of years, shown a reluctance to treat these one-off beatdowns into anything more significant other than, oh, we needed him to do something tonight, so we gave him a run-in option. We let him run in. We let him interfere. We let him get a beatdown or give a beatdown in this case, and then not follow up with it in a way that makes him look strong. In my mind, you make him look strong. You let him give a beatdown. You let him do something else next week. You build on this instead of it being so even Steven. We talk about even Steven booking all the time. It's just this parody right here, like this just even Steven, one-to-one pair. I just don't like to see them do that. And I'm worried that next week Dean Ambrose gets the one up, and then next week Kevin Owens, and then there's no storyline with that.
I know, man. So it's crazy. Let's get to Raw, because you know what the funny thing is about Raw is that, like, so they started off with a pretty good angle, they ended with a really good angle, and everything else in the middle wasn't that great.
Yeah.
Other than Vince McMahon interrupting a match, telling people to get out of his ring and comparing himself to God Almighty, which I did get a kick out of for some weird reason. Even though I'd like to forget the part where Vince McMahon, being 70 years old, was ready to fight Roman Reigns and got the better of the babyface soon-to-be champion by kicking him in the huevos.
Yeah, but it was kind of unexpected, and Roman Reigns was off guard. I can take that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it was. You can forget about it. You can push that one back like really quick. But other than that, I mean, it worked out really well. I mean, you could sit there too and say, why is Roman just taking it from Stephanie? And you know, the McMahons have to look so much better than everybody all the time. That's the argument people will say, is because Stephanie's out there and she slapped Roman like 7 or 8 times, and she was really giving it to him too, man. God bless that guy for taking that.
She was fiery. Yep.
Yep. And she was just cracking him, man. The only McMahon that hits harder is their mom. And then you had Vince out there. It's funny because we sit there and we talk about the Mr. McMahon character. What we saw on Monday was like a caricature of the Mr. McMahon character, which just takes it to another degree.
Yeah.
Between him. The best part, one of the best parts too, was there's so many little subtle things. Like when he pulled up in the limo and he got out, and there was like the security guy there, who had to have been about the same age as Vince, was standing there, and Vince like gave him a little stare, and the dude didn't even react. It was just like, yep, who the hell are you?
Yep.
Like Vince could not intimidate that guy, and then went and got in the ring, forced Bo Dallas and R-Truth to get out of his ring.
Yep.
And then said, there's a guy in the back that's shaking his boots because he's going to have to be standing in front of me, which is like standing in front of God Almighty. And
That was a great segment.
It was so funny, dude. He was doing the power walk, which isn't as bombastic, I guess, as it once was, but it's still pretty damn good. I miss Vince. I mean, I'm not saying that he needs to be on TV every week, but I truly believe that if they go the direction I think they're going to go, and that's Reigns against Triple H, excuse me, at Mania. I'm dying here. But if they do Reigns and Triple H at Mania, I know the Authority is going to be like the big antagonist in all of this, but I would love to see Vince McMahon out there like every, you know, 2 or 3 weeks or a couple of times, at least between now and Mania, because as much of a heat getters as Stephanie and Triple H are, Vince just puts it over the top.
Right. And the problem you have right now is, I agree with you. I think having Vince there, some would be good. Obviously, putting him out there too much would overexpose him. And the Triple H and Stephanie have that problem. They're overexposed as heels in that they've kind of been playing the same role for 2 or 3 years and nothing's changed. If you think back to when Vince McMahon was in full heel mode for that span, it was great because he was feuding with Austin, feuding with Mick Foley. And in that time, they brought in different factors for Vince McMahon to build off of. At one point, he turned face for a little while, and he was running the union. And then the union merged with the corporation, the ministry. And I mean, you had all these different factors that really stepped up him as a heel. And they've never done much of that. They've never really developed these extraneous. They had Kane, corporate Kane, there for a little while, but that was kind of a joke. They've never developed these extraneous characters around Triple H and Stephanie in a way that's supported their characters. And so I think having somebody else out there to kind of take part of that spotlight, somebody we know, somebody who's one of the best ever at just being a heel, being the McMahon heel is a thing. And so I think it's great. Don't want to overdo it, but it was great for Roman Reigns on Monday night too.
That match, I mean, and by the way, I want to make mention of this too. Give a lot of credit to Sheamus for the work that he did in those two matches. People could say whatever they want about Sheamus, like him or not. That dude goes out there and he works hard. And he was working extremely hard, just like Roman was, at both of those matches. And Sheamus put him over and made him look like $1 million. Mm-hmm. Okay? I mean, it takes two to tango. I give them both a lot of credit. But, I mean, Sheamus more than held up his end of the bargain. And that dude looked fantastic in helping Reigns. You know, it's funny because when that match started on Monday night, the crowd really wasn't into it that much. Mm. But they started to get into it. And then the second that Vince pulled the ref out just when Reigns was about to get that three count, it went nuts. It was just like, hot damn, what the hell's going on here? You know? And that's where we really took it up another level. Freaking even Roman Reigns headbutt Sheamus, like hard way headbutt him, and had blood covering half his face at one point, which was just amazing. And Michael Cole even acknowledged it, talking about, oh, Reigns is busted open off that headbutt. And so they were going nuts, you know, once Vince interfered. And then Vince standing on the apron and was doing the come here to the ref and put his arm around him and was telling him like what to do so Rusev and Del Rio could interfere. And then Roman got them both with Superman punches. And then freaking old man, 70-year-old Vince McMahon took a bump on the apron.
Yeah. He just laid there. It just laid there.
Oh, my. I was like, this dude is 70, man. He's taking bumps. I was like, oh, my God. Yep. It was great. He took a second one later because he was, like, getting up after Reigns won the title, and Reigns hit him again, so he got knocked out of the ring. I was like, geez almighty. Yep. But Vince, that, you know what that was? That was an F you to everybody out here in the internet world, because they even made references before about how Vince even said, he goes, everybody thinks I'm old, or, you know, I'm out of touch, you know, or whatever.
Yep.
And this was his little screw you, I still know what's best for business. And just to put a little cherry on the top, I'll go out there and I'll put over Reigns because I know that I'm Vince McMahon. I'm a huge star. I'm a big heel. I'll get this freaking guy over and I'll even take bumps in the process.
Yep. Yep. It was fan. Yep. God, that was Vince McMahon for you.
God bless that old geezer, man.
God bless him. God bless him.
God bless that old geezer. But it was great. I mean, the way that worked out, and Roman's, you know, got that spear and everything, and got the victory. I mean, it was good. The only thing that was missing was the piles and piles of confetti where we couldn't see Roman Reigns as it spilled down. But I guess we already got that once.
Well, we've had that moment again. The title moment was already gone.
Yeah,
we've had that pay-per-view. It kind of killed this, but that match was booked really well, and we can't say enough about that either. Sometimes it takes really great booking in a match to make the audience feel something and to convince that audience that Roman Reigns was being unjustly done. After the whole last year, the audience was convinced that Roman Reigns was getting the silver spoon. I think it was great. And you owe a lot of that to the referee, to, like you said, Vince McMahon, to Sheamus. You cannot he's been the overlooked factor in all this. And Sheamus has been great day in and day out as this heel champion. So,
oh, I agree. You know, and I'm curious to see what is going to come next for Sheamus. I hope he doesn't get lost in the shuffle here. Here's my quick idea of what I think is going to happen. I don't know when this is going up, but I did do a column for Fox, so I'm spoiling my column here a little bit. but I really think that where they're going to go is it makes sense that they do Reigns against Triple H for Mania. And I think the way you get there is I think at the Rumble you could do the rematch with Sheamus and Reigns, right? And you even try to stack the deck there. Okay. You know, I don't know if it's like, you know, Stephanie's the timekeeper or, you know, all the different little tricks you can do. But Reigns still wins the championship, right? And then I think what could happen is, so Lesnar's in the Rumble. Triple H is in the Rumble. But he comes out as like number 30. So he rigs it. So he comes out last, right? and the League of Nations costs Lesnar the match. And Triple H wins the Rumble. So what that does is now Hunter has the title shot against Reigns. And Lesnar goes up against Sheamus at Mania.
Okay. That would be interesting. I'd still question. So Lesnar and Sheamus, huh?
Yeah, Lesnar and Sheamus. Because, I mean, okay, so when you really look at it with Reigns, okay, there's three options for him, right? Hunter, Lesnar, Cena. I don't think, but the story that they're telling right now is the best story that they have. And that's why I don't think you should do the Hunter match at Rumble. I mean, they could. Right. They could do something where he's still got to get past Lesnar. That was the match last year. They could even do the passing of the torch with Cena. I think they can hold off on all that. You know, you've got a story. Build it up to Mania. You could do all these different things where you're going to screw with Reigns between now and then. And you've got two pay-per-views to screw with him. And he just stays on top. To finally, it builds up to the Triple H match. So that means, what do you do with Cena? What do you do with Lesnar? I guess you could do the Lesnar-Owens match. I don't know where you put Sheamus then, but in the other, you know, the other way around, I don't know what you do with Owens. I'm convinced they're going to do Cena and Taker, especially now, because you don't have Rock Wrestling on the show. You don't have Austin Wrestling on the show. You don't have Seth Rollins. You don't have Randy Orton. You don't have Cesaro. You don't have a celebrity as of right now. And even if you do, a celebrity probably won't wrestle. You don't have Ronda Rousey in a match like you had originally planned and hoped for. And that was the original thing with doing, you know, Triple H against The Rock, or Triple H and Stephanie against The Rock and Ronda. So they need like this kind of legends match, kind of a dream match, I think. And to me, the dream match then is Cena Taker. I mean, it's lost the luster because the streak is over, but I think that's, you know, to me, that makes sense that's where they have to put Cena right now.
I think that's the one area you can go with it, because there's still enough intrigue there. Fans, the streak, it doesn't need the streak. It can just be a match on its own. And of course, The Undertaker will always be an attraction. But I'm buying what you're selling, Brian Fritz.
I'm trying. Now, well, there's still a lot of other variables, I mean, with all of this, because, like, what do you do with Kevin Owens? What do you do? I think they're going to do Ambrose and Jericho as well. But what do you do with Kevin Owens? What do you do to fill up the rest of the card? I mean, you got the Divas match, you have a tag team match. There's an outside chance Rollins could be back. I would hope he's not back. I don't want him to rush to come back. So I would say no. Sure. You could say the same thing about Daniel Bryan. That's a whole nother battle that I have no idea where it's at. I don't think Daniel's going to, even if he does return to the ring in WWE, I don't think it'll be before Mania. There's a lot of other questions to that show, but I think that's how it's setting up. It's not what they had planned. It's not what they had hoped for, but I think that's kind of the direction that they're kind of stuck with going right now.
Yeah, it's Daniel Bryan, of course, is, in my mind, he's the big question mark. He's the big, that's going to change everything once he comes back. How is the audience going to respond after it's been this long, after there were two breaks that have basically really killed his momentum? But yeah, you're so limited because of injuries. And as an aside to all of this WrestleMania talk, injuries are a big deal. And it reinforces the idea that I think WWE should institute some kind of, even if it's not an off season, some kind of rotational calendar where guys can get a little bit more time off to rest up. They can take 2 months off. You know, I'm not saying you take Raw off the air for 2 months every year, but have like an A team and a B team and a C team, and they overlap in ways that guys get a couple of months off and then everybody's back for WrestleMania. That way people can rest up and get that mental break, get that physical break. I still think that's something they need to do for their athletes.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think the wrestlers are kind of coming around on that. I mean, obviously nobody wants to miss Mania season or SummerSlam, but there's got to be a way where guys can get a little bit more time off that, like you said, you can rotate them around. The funny thing is say Daniel Bryan is able to come back, even if it's after Mania, right? So you get Daniel Bryan back, you're going to get Seth Rollins back, you're going to get Cesaro back. sooner or later you're going to get Orton back, but that might not be for like a year. So let's not even count Orton, but just those other three guys alone, you know, that's going to be pretty good. And then that's actually going to be really good. And then, you know, you could, sometime next year, I think you get a call up from Finn Balor.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a little ways off yet, but, you know, you're going to get Balor called up. And Sami Zayn, I mean, he could be called up immediately. I mean, he was going to be called up, and then he got injured, so they called up Kevin Owens instead. So, I mean, Sami could be right there. I mean, I have a feeling that Sami might stick around with NXT until after Mania, but maybe. I mean, who knows? Maybe that's the match for Kevin Owens at Mania, is you do Sami Zayn.
Yeah, that could be good. That would be a great feud to bring up to the main roster. At some point, you're going to start thinning out your roster a lot on NXT, and that will be interesting as well to see what they do without some of these headliners that really have built the second phase of NXT. Phase one of NXT, right, we had phase one. Neville and Bo Dallas kind of brought that to fruition. We've had this phase two with all these named talents kind of coming into the fold, like Sami Zayn, like Samoa Joe, like Finn Balor. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens now that some of these guys are moving up and where they go next.
Well, you know what? Quite honestly, too, I mean, I sit here and I kind of map out where I think they're going to go with Mania, but I don't know yet. And I don't think it's really certain. You know, there's still a lot of pieces that we're trying to fit together here. And I kind of like it. I mean, there's some years where you have a really strong sense of where they're going. This year, I have a pretty good sense, but not a total one. It's still kind of up in the air with a lot of different things, you know, a lot of different moving parts. And, I mean, it sucks to have the injuries and whatnot, but at the same, I mean, and it sucks that, you know, no Ronda Rousey either. But, you know, it's nice to not necessarily know where they're going and kind of guess and kind of see, go on for the ride and see what happens. And hopefully it turns out for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. You know, I mean, who the hell knows? I could be totally wrong. It's just, you know, I mean, as long as it's a good show, you know, and it turns out. Now, how about, did you see the rating for Raw on Monday night? Because it
no.
Was, okay. So it went way up. Okay. It went from a 2.15 to a 2.66. So it went up over a half a point.
Wow.
Get this. So the previous week, it averaged 3.054 million viewers. Raw on Monday night averaged 3.88 million viewers. So it was 826,000 more viewers. No, 726,000 more viewers, if I'm doing my math right. I might
that's
be wrong.
Crazy.
It was basically about 800,000.
but that's insane. That's a huge jump. And it's going up like that. That's important. That's big.
Monstrous right there. And can they keep that up? I mean, how much of that was because of Vince?
Yeah. And they built that show in a way that people wanted to tune in and figure out what's going to happen. And they stuck around, you know? And that was a good Monday Night Raw game. Monday Night Football game. Granted, it's not the biggest market with, you know, the Dolphins kind of being this weird team that's never been very good recently. But that game was close through the end.
Yeah, I mean, the ratings were down for Monday Night Football, but it still did 11.5 million viewers.
Right.
So, but it wasn't – normally they do about, what, 12 or 13? So it was down a little bit, but, I mean, hey, Raw jumped way back up. It's just, can it continue like that? And was it – I think some of it was because of the story that they were telling. It was just like a – it was the 1 3-hour story about what's happening with Roman Reigns, and then you had Vince McMahon returning. And then seeing it capped off with the championship changing hands. You know, obviously you can't do that every week. You wouldn't want to do that unless you're a certain guy that booked for WCW, whose name I won't mention here. for that night it worked. Do you see any possibility where Roman Reigns is not the champion going into Mania?
I think what you've had happen is you've had a long title run with Seth Rollins. You've had a short title run with Sheamus. I think Roman Reigns is going to have one of those medium title runs. I think they're convinced he is the next big thing, that he is their go-to boy for the next however long, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. Mm-hmm. He's their moneymaker. So this first run has got to last at least until WrestleMania. I do not think he will be the champion in a year. I do not think he will be the champion by SummerSlam, but I think he holds onto the belt to Mania through Mania and lose it in the summer.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, the biggest difference, too, is it's been a while since we've had a babyface champion that was not John Cena.
Yes.
So that, you know, and it's been a little while since we had one anyway, because, you know, Rollins had the belt for as long as he did. And then, you know, Sheamus had his, you know, short title run. So, you know, now you put it on Reigns. And the funny thing is, like, I mean, the storyline is right there, too. When Rollins comes back, he'll go after Reigns and say, I'm the true champion. So, I mean, that's an easy storyline to tell there. And it's not that difficult to get other people, you know, involved, too. I mean, you can still do the Dean Ambrose heel turn at some point if you want. You right. can probably do Kevin Owens at some point, you know. I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities that are going to be open here to see where they go. So, and then speaking of where they're going, so SmackDown is going to USA Network on January 7th. So that's when it makes the move. And a big change in that Mauro Ranallo has been signed by WWE, and he is going to be the man calling the action.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't think anybody saw this one coming.
No. That's interesting. They've been doing some funky things with the announced team lately. This year, really.
Oh, yeah. And the funny thing is, I like Rich Brennan a lot. I mean, I'm glad that he's still the voice of NXT. I think he's really, really good. But I'm very happy for Mauro as well.
Mauro Ranallo, he's a talent. He's a talented guy.
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, so the way that Mauro was talking about it and talk with me about it and with other people, and then you know, just kind of the vibe that you know, there's been some rumblings about this, that SmackDown's going to have a much different look and feel once it makes the move. Even Mauro said that he thinks it's going to be a mix between like what it is now and NXT.
Good.
So I mean that's definitely good, and I really think they should do some changes with Raw as well, because you know, it's kind of been the same thing, and it's not just the formula of everything; it's just kind of the look and the feel and everything. And we could sit here and talk too about the formula that they do, and we've talked about that plenty of times as well. But I just think there needs to be some changes because it's been the same for so long. I'm glad they're going to make some changes to SmackDown. I'm going to be very curious to see where they go with it. But obviously, they're putting a lot of attention on it, and they're going to put a lot more attention than what it is now on it, because they're bringing in Mauro. They're changing this look and feel for at least the first couple of months. You think there's got to be an emphasis on it because they want to deliver ratings for USA. I'm curious to see what else they might do.
They've already been, and so like we can take a step back and see that even in the last week or so, they're making a few small tweaks of the format of the show. Yeah. You had this this post match interview with Kevin Owens that was great, that was character driven, that was not hokey. When they did come back, so the thing about it that's always really bothered me is they have these backstage segments where the cameraman is in the locker room and these guys talk to each other like there's not a cameraman right in front of them. And that drives me up a freaking wall. It makes everybody look dumb. It makes the audience feel dumb. What they did on Monday night was great. They had this great backstage interview segment with Kevin Owens. I liked it. They had this promo from the Dudley Boys, from the ECW Originals crew. And yeah, it was intercut with these you know, older video clips that tried to oversell the story a little bit. But it was very directed, mm-hmm. and it had a purpose of making the match later in the night feel important. And that was fantastic. So they're doing these little things now that aren't just generic filler. Oh, look, we're in Triple H and Stephanie's office. That harken back to more of what happened in the Attitude Era, to more of what they do in NXT. And I really hope that this format, this new format for SmackDown, can kind of blend where Raw is or how it's transforming, where NXT has been, and kind of make it unique and worthwhile to watch again.
I'm going to be curious to see who joins him at the broadcast booth. Is it still going to be Booker T and Jerry Lawler? Is it going to be one or the other? If it's only one, I would say Lawler. But even then, it's nothing against Booker T or Jerry Lawler. Okay, I don't like anybody losing their jobs. But if they're going to make a change, I'm a much bigger fan of a two-man booth than a three-man booth. I think three-man gets cluttered.
Yes.
I like Byron Saxton. I think his best work is still in NXT. I kind of wish, I mean, it's a great opportunity for him, but I kind of wish he was not on Raw. But if they're going to put Mauro on there, I wonder if they would make a change to the color commentator and put Corey Graves on there with him.
Hmm. Okay. That could be interesting.
Because, I mean, that's a much...
More natural, yeah.
Well, much, you know, it... Both, I mean, Morrow's like 45, Corey's, what, you know, 30s. But, I mean, they're a little bit louder, boisterous guys, excited guys. I think Corey's really, really good at what he does, especially when he's, like, calling the NXT shows, even much better than when he's on panels. And, you know, Morrow's going to do what he's going to do, and Morrow's going to be bombastic, he's going to be excited, and he's going to be flamboyant, and that's what he is, you know, and... You know, he knows when to pick his spots, and when there's a really big match and something really big happens, he's going to scream out Mamma Mia, and, you know, Corey is going to be able to, you know, add, you know, his analysis as a heel too, and I think they'll play off one another really, really well. I think Morrow would thrive, you know, in that environment.
Yep, I think so too, and I think you're kind of hitting on this, but the person who he's with needs to be a little more low-key. Unfortunately, that's not Jerry Lawler. Booker T is kind of all over the place too. I think Corey Graves is the perfect companion to somebody like Rinaldo.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they're going to do there, and I don't think they would do anything on Raw, but I wonder if they would make a change there. I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe they won't do anything, and they just put Morrow in there, which we'll see how it works. You know, I hope Morrow does really well, and hopefully, you know, whoever he works with, it blends, you know, really good. Well, I want to see what happens with SmackDown. You know, I'm curious to see what other changes that they do. You know, and what they can what other tweaks they can make to that show. So, we're taping this on Wednesday. NXT London is over. You have not seen it. I've already spoiled one thing for you this week, apparently, so mm-hmm. I will not spoil another.
I'm excited about that main event, man. That's I have not seen Samoa Joe and Finn Balor tear down the house yet. And that's what I'm assuming they're going to do. So,
well, I'll just say this: it was a very good show, as everybody expected. I'm actually going to be doing another podcast later in the week, and I will talk about it then. So I won't spoil it for you right now.
Okay.
See what a nice guy I am.
You're the best, Brian Fritz. You are the nicest guy I know. Mm. But also feverishly avoiding Star Wars spoilers that have been floating out overnight. So.
By the way, any bastard out there that got to see the movie already, like for, you know, because you're covering it or reviewing it for a website or whatever. Okay.
Seeing the movie does not make you a bastard. Let's just clarify.
No. But any person that has gotten an opportunity to see a screener and then post spoilers about it online, even if they say in the review, you're a bastard, okay? I'm going to tell you right now. And I guess I was warned this, not that I go on Reddit that often, but like sometimes I go into the wrestling section. Mm-hmm. And in the wrestling section, there is a post that says flat out the title. It says, "This is not wrestling related, but be on the lookout for people that are spoiling Star Wars here on Reddit."
What? That's so weird.
So I guess somebody, or at least a couple people, have seen it. They're going on to Reddit and like spoiling the entire movie.
It's like, why?
I'm like, you should be beaten in the streets for that, man. I mean, come on, dude. What? I think we could, that's one of the reasons why maybe we should activate the purge. Okay, but
wow.
I don't know if that's a little too stiff or not.
Yeah, that's a little bit. There
but I mean, I it was funny because like I woke up this morning and like I was on Facebook and like in my feed it just said like all these different outlets see our spoiler free review of Star Wars, like over and over and over again. And I was like, my God, I feel like I'm the only person that hasn't seen the damn movie yet. I was like,
there are a lot of people who have seen it, and I don't know how that happened, but we need to get in on that action. Cheap pops, baby.
I know, man. And it's some. I'll give a lot of credit to some different people out there that have done some skits with the Star Wars cast. Stephen Colbert did a skit with J.J. Abrams and Harrison Ford, which was fantastic. Here's another one too. I was watching SportsCenter on Tuesday night. And they were talking about coming up at the top of the hour, our special half hour Star Wars Sports Center. And it was all based about lightsabers and lightsaber battles, how that came from the samurai and how that like it originally came from the samurai and how that kind of the genesis of that is what Kendo is now. And it was a 30-minute show hosted by Mark Hamill talking about that. I was like, what?
Huh?
So I just kind of fell into it. Now, so I watched that, you know, and then, I'm not like any other place that's like showing a lot of stuff and they're like, hey, here's 10 seconds of footage you've never seen before of Star Wars. I'm like, no, not doing that.
Block. Yep. Pause, delete, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So are you going to see Star Wars on Thursday night?
Yes. Yes, I am. I am going at 10 o'clock, 7 o'clock. I figured would be a tight fit for getting off of work and eating. Yeah. But secondly, 10 o'clock works out because I want to get a good seat. And if you're going to the 7 o'clock showing, you're going to need to be there 3 hours in advance to get the seat you want. 10 o'clock, get all the crazies through. I'll be there. Get the seat I want just a little bit early. So.
Well, I do have seats to 7 o'clock. Uh-huh. And as the spokesman, I guess, for our group. Or basically the only person that gets off work early enough to do this. I'm going to go scout it a couple hours early and see if there is a line. And it's funny because, like, so the theater I'm going to is a big theater. I know the show that we're going to is sold out, but there's other shows throughout the night, including 3D, that have not sold out. Like, there's even 3D shows at 7 o'clock that have not sold out there. So I'm wondering, like, okay, is it going to be like everybody shows up an hour, hour and a half before, or is it going to be like 3 hours before? Because I'm going to roll by the theater. I'm going to roll by the theater about 3 hours early, and if there already is a line, then I'm going to jump in the line. I'll be a total nerd. If there is not, I'm going to go get something to eat, and then I'll come back and jump in the line or start the line or whatever. As long as I'm like within the first like 50 or 60 people, then I'm cool with that. You know, because I know I'll get good seats because it's in a really big theater. If there's already like I did this one time, we showed up an hour early for the last Batman movie, right?
Uh-huh.
And then we showed up like an hour or so early, and there was like 100 people in line at least. But
wow.
But I still got good seats somehow. And I'm as soon as I got into the theater, I like ran. But I got good seats, and there was a group of like 7 of us. So I don't know how I did that, but it was a really big theater. So that's
I'm trying to avoid some of that craziness. So I think 10 o'clock should help. We'll see. We'll see what happens. My wife and I are going to finish knocking out the originals tonight. We have episode 6 on tap as soon as I finish up recording with you.
It's funny you say that because I'm watching Return of the Jedi tonight too.
Oh, well, we should have a Skype party.
Probably. I know, right?
Like old time.
Let's like go watch it together and we just talk with each other. And go,
we see, on the phone. We got to have one of those phones put into the wall with the curly little cords. It could be like the old days.
Is it like a When Harry Met Sally kind of moment?
Uh-huh, or? Exactly. You and I can have our When Harry Met Sally moment finally after all these years of doing the podcast.
As long as I'm Harry, you can be Sally.
I'm okay with that.
That means you got to do the fake orgasm scene.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. We'll see.
The worst part is I got to sit there and take it, you know?
Yep.
Like looking at you going, oh, my.
Oh, man.
That would not be good, man, at all.
Ooh, this is
Are you worried where this has turned into?
Yep.
Only I could steer it in this direction.
Between the ropes is.
Only I could steer it in this direction, my friend.
Wow.
Yeah.
And on that note,
you love it. So, I hope everybody checked out the podcast I also did with Kevin Eck, as we talked a lot about Mania. We talked about his expertise when it comes to WWE booking, considering he was on the creative team. So we did that. And then later on the week, on Friday, I'll be back with Scott Fishman, actually, our buddy. And we'll talk about the NXT show and a couple of other things. And reminder, everybody, you can find all the podcasts now on SoundCloud. Just go to soundcloud.com/betweentheropes. Please support us on Patreon. Everybody that's been doing that, you're fantastic people. I really appreciate it. And for anybody else that could do that, that would be great. And of course, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher, and please rate us and review us as well. So thanks again, everybody. We'll catch up with you later on the week. Talk to you then.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Man, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.